give you one, and just leave your hand up for a minute. They're coming through right now. Darkness. I don't know if you've ever been in a really dark place, maybe physically dark. You've been in a place where it's been actually physically dark. You know, one of the things, a dark room, a dark alley, a dark building. When I was 19 years old, I discovered spelunking. Spelunking is where you go caving. You find a cave in the ground. You drop yourself through that hole, and you end up kind of maneuvering in that hole. And, you know, you're 19, and you're single, and you're there with a bunch of friends. There's about 40 of us. And one of the young ladies that I, at that time, thought was quite attractive said, "Oh, I forgot my flashlight." So I'm like, "Here's mine," right? Not realizing once you lowered yourself into that hole in the ground and went a few feet, it's actually dark, like quite dark. And so I got in the hole, and I got a little ways down, and they'd made their way a bit ahead of me, some of the team, and so I couldn't see their light, and I got to a point where I couldn't see anything. I just remember utter, entire blackness under the ground, and so I'm feeling my way around, and I could feel on this, I was on a ledge, on this one side of me, there was just a bit of a drop, and so I thought, well, I remember them saying that if I got to a certain point, I could just kind of hang and drop, and about 2 feet below where I would be another ledge, and so I grabbed a hold of the ledge I was on in complete utter darkness. I lowered myself, and I was about to let go to land on the other ledge. And I remember a voice inside of me saying, "Don't let go. Just don't let go." Oh, my parents are here this morning. I forgot my mom's listening to this right now. And I was going to let go and don't let go. And this went on, this little battle with me for a few minutes. And I thought, come on, this is dumb. How bad could this be? How deep can this thing be? I mean, we're in Milton. It's an escarpment, not even a mountain. I was about to let go, and all of a sudden I saw light below me, literally about 30 feet below me. I'm like, "Hey." And my friends are like, "Hey," and they shone the light up, and there was nothing between me and the 30-foot drop. Pulled myself back up on the ledge and said, "Thank you, Lord," you know. But it was utterly, utterly pitch dark, completely dark, right? I remember taking the children from our church downstairs into the church basement, and this is like eight, I think Amy and I were even married 19 years ago, as an object lesson, right? Going to go downstairs, had someone turn off the light, and I'm going to put a flashlight on to show them that Jesus is the light. So we had just caught and exterminated 23 rodents in the basement of the church. And it's predominantly dirt. And the kids had heard these stories, and I hadn't thought through that. And we got downstairs, and we're there, and I've got all these kids downstairs. Listen, they don't let me do this anymore, just so you know. Not allowed with childcare anymore. So we're down there. I'm with all the kids, and they turn off the light. And I'm about to turn the flashlight on, and all of a sudden the kids are yelling, the rats, you're going to eat us, the rats. And kids are crying, and I turn the flashlight on, and for whatever reason, I didn't test it ahead of time. It doesn't go on. It doesn't work. So I'm banging it with kids crying, and they're going to eat us. Anyway, third example of darkness is in the new building. This is about 5 years ago. I had Ethan and his friends there. We were playing ball hockey and hanging out, and we were leaving, and I didn't know the light switches very well, and I flipped off a light, and it turned off all the lights, and Ethan kicked a wall. Fantastic. The next day, his foot was quite swollen, so he kept playing, and his friends were there, and we hung out, and Sunday, we went to the ER, and we got there, and he's with the triage nurse, and as we're there, or doing whatever, she's like, "What happened?" And he's like, "Remember, I turned off the lights." He's like, "Well, my dad broke my foot." I'm like, "What?" That's what he says to the triage nurse. So all of a sudden, she looks at me and she says, "Sir, maybe you should step aside." I'm like, "Listen." She said, "Sir, I need to talk to him right now." I'm like, "Oh, right? You need to talk to him while the other person's calling Children's Aid, and I have to call Amy and the police or something. Here we go." And he's like, "Yeah, I was in the basement of the church." And she said, "Your dad broke your foot in the church." I'm like, "Oh, this is sounding so bad." And he's like, "Well, he turned off the light and I kicked a wall." "Oh, so your dad didn't do anything to you?" "Well, he turned off the light." "Well," she said, "that's not your dad really breaking your foot." And he said, "Well, it felt that way." And she goes, "Well, it's not that way. And you probably shouldn't describe it to anyone else that way. Just say you broke your foot." So I don't know if you've ever been in complete and utter darkness, right? The basement of that church is dark. It's just, there's no windows. There's no light that comes in. Those caves when I was in them, they're just dark. They're dark. The basement of our church was dark, completely dark, utterly dark, right? And sometimes you found yourself in a dark place. But sometimes we find ourselves in a dark place and it's got nothing to do with physical location. It's got nothing to do with geography. It's got everything to do with our soul. It's got everything to do with our heart. And we find ourselves in a dark place, maybe because of all this bitterness that's built up in our lives. Maybe there's resentment that's just crept in and it's continued to work in our lives. Maybe as we've grown, we found that we've become people that are just consumers. And as we've consumed, we've ended up with this insurmountable debt. We have this credit card debt, and we have this line of credit debt, and we have this mortgage debt. And with all this debt, we find ourselves in this darkness. You know, maybe we're not quite at the place where creditors are calling us, but maybe we are. Right? Maybe we find ourselves in a dark place because of strained family relations. Maybe strained family relations that we have caused, that we've actually brought upon ourselves, that we've done. You see, sometimes it's not just the physical location that brings darkness. Sometimes it's dark because of the way we live our lives. And we want to escape the darkness because it gnaws at our soul. Anybody know what I'm talking about? The darkness gnaws at our soul. When you live with that type of bitterness, or you live that type of resentment, when you choose to live that way, the weight of all of that upon you, when you simply believe you continue to need to buy and purchase and own, when you thought that the light of your life was going to be this relationship that you entered into, this marriage, and it's become dark, or it's actually dissolved. When you thought that the light of your life was going to be this job and how it would provide for you, and the job's been found wanting, and even though you're making more money, you're spending more. You name it. And all of a sudden, you find yourself in these moments of darkness, and you don't know where to turn, and you don't know where to go. And the darkness is suffocating. And it feels like it can be even hard to breathe. And you long, you look for some type of light. How did my life become this dark? How did I become so trapped in greed? How did I become so trapped in bitterness? How did I become so trapped in sexual sin? How did I become so trapped? You name it, whatever it is. In Isaiah 9, 740 years before Jesus is born, the prophet Isaiah writes these words. I'll be in Isaiah 9 and John 1 this morning. Isaiah 9 says this: the people were walking in darkness. They've seen a great light. God's saying, my people were walking in darkness, but now they've seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, he describes the darkness as deep, thorough, black. But a light has dawned, a child is born, a son is given, the government will be upon his shoulders. You see, God's people were enslaved. The northern kingdom at this point in time had been occupied by the world power known as the Assyrians. It'll only be a few years from now that a world power will emerge known as the Babylonians. And they will come, and they will take the southern kingdom, and they will bring them out into exile. So the northern kingdom is being occupied by the Assyrians. The southern kingdom of Israel is going to be, is going to be invaded by the Babylonians, and people are going to be taken into exile. And it's dark. Some of the darkness is there because people are doubting as if God exists. Some of the darkness is there because people are choosing to worship other gods and not just God himself. Some of the darkness is there because of the way that they're interacting as families, because of how they're living their lives. And he says, you're walking in darkness. You know how hard it is to walk in darkness? Anybody ever been just in a dark place trying to walk and there's no light? You don't have a light? I mean, now we all have a light on our phones, right? You just turn the light function on and you can see at least a few feet in front of you. But under darkness, you're walking in darkness. And all of a sudden, you see a light. You see a light. I'll never forget when I saw that light shine up at me when I was in that spelunking cave. I'm like, hey, that was helpful, right? I didn't drop. It was good, right? You're walking down a dark place. I've been there, right? And you're like, man, this is way darker than I thought. And you see a light, and the light brings hope. And Isaiah says the light is going to be a child. The light is going to be a son. And the weight of the government will be on his shoulders. His shoulders. You see, sometimes as you walk through life, because of external things, maybe disease, maybe death, maybe abandonment, maybe an accident, maybe a crisis, you can end up in a place where you start to question, does God exist and does he love me? Does God exist? And if God exists, does God care? Does God care? Right? That's where we can end up. In fact, one of the families we helped out this week with Christmas hampers, I was just burdened for them. On Monday night, I just prayed that God would, and during the toy shop, burden me with a family to care for. And I met this one family, I connected with them, and we brought them some extra food and stuff. They had nothing. The three older kids who were in their 20s had been abandoned by their father. He just left, no child support, no help, just left and went and moved to another country so that he wouldn't have to pay child support. And then there's two younger kids, and the dad in that scenario has just done the same thing and moved away so he doesn't pay child support. And so we helped them. I showed up Tuesday night and helped them, and then, you know, came here Wednesday and learned that the one boy who's 8 years old with a size 10 feet had no boots. So that Wednesday night, I took Ethan and we drove off. Ethan came and helped at the food hamper packing thing with me, and we drove off and got him. I took his older brother with me to Walmart, and we just got him boots, and we got him some clothes as we're driving back. This older boy who's 20 was just beside himself. And this is what he said. He said as we were driving back, he said, when your life ends up like this, you assume either God doesn't exist, or if he does, he doesn't care. You assume either God doesn't exist, or if he does, he doesn't care. And then he said this to me. Tonight, he said, I've come to believe that God exists and he cares. Isaiah, as he's writing this 740 years before Jesus shows up, he's writing in a day when it's incredibly dark, when world powers are attacking God's people, when they're crushing and annihilating them, and when their own mess of sin has created a darkness within them. And he says, a child is born, a son is given, the government will be on his shoulders. Each of the Gospels, that's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, offer an account of the coming of Christ. Matthew and Luke give what we know as the narrative of the Christmas story. Mark simply says that the Messiah, the Christ, is coming. But John does it uniquely. John writes in a theoretical and philosophical way. And John writes this in John 1. He says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Note what he says. In the beginning, if you know your Bible at all, you'll know that that's reminiscent of the book of Genesis. What does the author of Genesis say? In the beginning, God. That's a big statement, isn't it? In the beginning, God. In the beginning, at the start, God. And then here, John picks that up in John 1, and John says, in the beginning was the Word. He's picking up from the book of Genesis. In the beginning was the Word. And then he tells us who this Word was. The Word was with God. The Word was God. That term there means entirely equal with him. He was with God in the beginning. Though through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all of humanity. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. John says this is the Word. He says all things have been made through him. Nothing. He says it twice, right? All things made through him. Then he repeats it in the opposite way. Nothing has been created, or nothing has been made that wasn't made by him. And in him is life, and that life is the light of humanity. He said the darkness can't overcome it. John continues and says this, the true light that has given light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, and his own did not recognize him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or of a husband's will, but born of God. John here says, this is the true light. This is the true light. The Word is the true light. The Word that's come down is the true light. I mean, there's lots of people out there that claim to have light, right? They came to have light. Lots of religions, lots of movements that claim to have light. But John says, I want you to know who the true light is. The true light, the authentic light, is Christ. I don't watch a ton of TV, but occasionally if I do and I'm watching reality TV, maybe you don't consider this reality TV, but I like the show Pawn Stars, or I like the show American Pickers, right? And one of the things that happens is sometimes something will come into the shop, you know, in the pawn shop, or something at American Pickers, they'll find something. And the question will be, is this authentic, right? Is this a copy? Is this something that someone has created that looks like the real thing, but is it authentic? And they'll bring in some expert who will look at someone's signature to see if it's really a document that King George the whatever signed, or to see if it's something that someone really did, to see if it really dates back to that date or time, and they'll know certain specifics about it, right? Is this authentic? Is this real? John says, I want you to know that Jesus is real. He's authentic. He's the true light. He's the true light. He's the light on which you can count. Lots of places will claim to have light, will tell us that they're light. Other religions, movements. But John says Jesus is the true light. C.S. Lewis says this, I love this quote. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen. Not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. I love that quote. C.S. Lewis says, Christianity to me is like the sun. It's not just that I can see the sun rise, but when the sun rises, I can see everything else. And if you're a Christian today, you know that's true. When the true light of Christ enters into your life, when the true light of the gospel grabs a hold of your life, all of a sudden you see life in a whole different way. Why? Because you see life from the perspective of the one who's made everything. That's what John says. You see life from the perspective of the one who's created all things. In fact, John says that right here in that in him was life, and that life is the light of humanity. You see, prior to Christ, what most of us think is that Christianity is foolishness. Why would you ever want to follow God? Why would you ever want to be restricted in that way? Why would you ever want to walk with him? But what happens is as God saves you, you realize that the things that you thought were restricting were actually freeing. That which you thought would actually prohibit you from living actually bring life. That life is found in giving your life away. That life is found in forgiving other people. That life is found in following him. That life is found in ways that we think are unimaginable because they're so opposite to anything the world ever calls us to live by. The world calls us to spend on ourselves. The world calls us to live for ourselves. The world calls us to pleasure ourselves. The world calls us to do what we want when we want for ourselves. And the gospel is opposite to all of that. The gospel tells us that in Christ, the light of life, we truly experience and know who he is and what he wants to do by living and walking in his steps. And as God saves and he delights in saving, we realize that he is the true light. And as we look at him, we see everything else clearly. We see that greed that we thought was allowing us to live by owning more possessions and doing more stuff, whatever that would look like, was actually killing us because it was enslaving us. We thought that the pleasure of that sexual sin that we thought would bring life with that person we weren't married to only brings death and destruction. We thought that we had the right to not forgive, and all that's done is gnawed our soul. We thought we had the right to be bitter, and all that's done is created a weight on our shoulders. We thought we had the right to resent, and all that's done is destroy us. And Jesus is the true light. So the world, John says, though it was made by him, didn't even recognize him. But to anyone who does, who receives him, he gives the right to become his child. Not born of natural descent, not something that you could do on your own or of a husband's will, but born of God. David Platt, one of my favorite authors, writes this. I don't want to be part of something that can be explained by my own power or my own ability. I want to be a part of something that can only be explained by the power of God. I don't want to be part of something that can be explained by my own ability or my own power. I want to be part of something that can only be explained by the power of God. I mean, who can explain this? That God created, we sinned, in our rebellion we're separated from him. And the solution for our problem is that humanity had to die. That's it. That's hell, right? Humanity had to die. But in God's great love for us and not wanting that to happen, God chose to send his son. Because humans had to die. So a human had to die. So God sends his son. But humanity could never take the punishment for sin. So God himself came. And God cloaks his deity with humanity. He confines himself, the God who spoke everything into existence, he confined himself to a woman's womb for 9 months. He's born through the birth canal. He's there helpless. He's changed. He's fed. He's burped. I mean, can you imagine that God did that for you? That God did that for us? God would go to any extent to save you. God would go to any extent to bring you back to himself. God would go to any extent to show you how much he loved you. And so that's what he does. He lives 33 some odd years. At the end of his life, he chooses to give it up on a cross, dying on that cross for our sin. As he's dying for our sin, he experiences a separation that we never need to, as he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then 3 days later, because sin couldn't accuse him of doing anything wrong, he had done no wrong, death couldn't own him because the wages of sin are death and he hadn't sinned, and Satan couldn't defeat him. The power of the Father raised the Son to life again, and he is King of kings and Lord of lords forever. And so John says this in John 1. And so the Word became flesh. That's the incarnation, Jesus coming down, what we celebrate at Christmas, and made his dwelling among us. And we've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The Word, that's God, spoke everything into existence, became flesh. He tabernacled, is the idea of the Word there, among us. He showed up. And we see his glory, the glory of the one and only. How do we see his glory? I remember meeting Rick in Vancouver as I was sitting with Rick talking to him. He was in his 40s, and Rick looked at me, this is a couple of years ago, and said, I tried everything, Dwayne. I tried everything. I mean, I'm a wealthy, successful businessman. I searched through several religions. I analyzed so many, what you would call cults, but a variety of movements. I pleasured myself in any way I wanted. I bought whatever I needed. I didn't hold back, and I still found myself wanting. I still found my soul wasn't satisfied. And then he said, Jesus saved me. He saved my wife first. And I saw such a difference in her that I had to find out what was going on, and he saved me. And he said, since he saved me, I have never been wanting. And my soul is fully satisfied. Isaiah 9 tells us who this Word became flesh is 740 years before he's born. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Almighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. That's who he is. He is the Wonderful Counselor. He's created life. He knows what life is like. You can always go to him for advice. He is Mighty God. He's got everything under his control and power. He is the Everlasting Father, the Creator of all things. He is the Prince of Peace, bringing peace between us and him and then reconciling us to each other. And of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. At Christmas, many of us hang lights around our tree, sometimes lights external to our house. The other day, I was hanging lights in our tree outside of our house, and I was fairly high up on the ladder trying to get them up to these top branches, trying to hang onto the branch and climbing up in the tree, and Ethan was helping me, and at one point, he stepped back and he said, you need to get down, and I said, what's wrong? He said, I will be no part of your death out here. I said, what are you talking about? He said, Dad, honestly, like, are you thinking in that tree? I said, I'm just like my father. My dad's here. I can say that. I have watched my dad do some things like that in life that I questioned, and now I am my dad. And Ethan's like, this is just not safe. I don't want to hold the ladder for you. Like, it's my fault if something happens. I said, it's not your fault. I'm up in the tree, but hold that ladder, boy. Right? We hang these lights, and they shine at Christmas. They've talked about how Niagara Falls have relighted all their lights, and they're more spectacular. I haven't been yet to see them. Why do we hang lights at Christmas? Maybe because they represent the true light, Jesus Christ. And this Christmas, every time you see a light, would you remember the light of Christ? The light of Christ that came down, the light of Christ that would spare no expense to be in relationship with you, the light of Christ that pursues you, the light of Christ that loves you, the light of Christ that longs for us to know him. And you know what the good news is? The light of Christ longs to powerfully move in the hearts of those of us that have known him for 20 or 30 or 40 years, and glory in the incarnation, and wonder at his birth, and marvel and delight at his saving power and grace, and be thankful for the hope that he gives and his salvation. And the light of Christ longs to touch the lives of everyone here today, and specifically anyone who hasn't yet embraced him. For John wrote these words, yet to anyone who receives him, to anyone who believes on his name, he has the right to become the child of God. Not born of natural descent or of human decision or husband's will, but born of God. I'm going to invite the team to come up, and as the kids come in, they're going to lead us in song. But as they come up, I close with these words. How can this be? I mean, who is this person that can bring light into our life, that can bring salvation to our souls? He is the creator of all things, who spoke things into existence. In the beginning, he was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He is the wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He is the one, though facing imminent death, unless there be a miracle, that Julia Bear, with her cancer, can say, though my flesh and my heart may fail, God is the strength of my heart. He is my portion forever, because he is her God, and he loves to save.